You are now listening to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast.
Five, six, seven, eight. Holla, boys and girls, it's the BGN. Coming from the Marvel world to the DC friends. All the way from Hollywood to the PCN. She defends everyone from sleazy men. Won't apologize for spitting Shonda Rhimes. The space that we make is never colonized. Talking games and movies and actors.
Words? Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. My name is Jamie, and I am your host along with Ryan this week. In our very first segment, Ryan is hosting this episode featuring New York Times bestselling author and Emmy-winning correspondent for ABC News, Lindsay Davis. Lindsay brings us her latest children's book, Girls of the World, a book that celebrates all the girls that have and can accomplish and calls all girls to be leaders for equality, fairness, and a safe world in which to live. You know Lindsay Davis best for her role as the anchor on ABC News Live Prime, which is ABC News Live's first ever streaming evening newscast, and Weekend World News Tonight on Sundays. She is a correspondent filing reports for World News Tonight, Good Morning America, 2020, and Nightline. So we are pleased to be able to have Lindsay Davis on the Black Girl Nerds Podcast to talk about her latest book called Girls World. In our second segment, both Ryan and I join the show to do our weekly episode recaps of X-Men 97. We have not forgotten about you fans who love to hear our recaps. We talk about episode 6 and all I have is these words, Milky Way Ghetto. That's right. We are going to talk about what happened in episode 6, which is aptly titled Life Death Part 2. So if you are a fan of X-Men 97, stick around for segment 2 as we go into that recap. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this two-part episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast featuring New York Times bestselling author and Emmy-winning correspondent Lindsay Davis and our second segment of X-Men 97, episode 6. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan. And you know, at the Black Girl Nerds Podcast, we take any moment we can to shine a light on just women of color, Black women really doing their thing out there. And you know, it doesn't have to be a certain month for me to shine a light on certain women. But you know, I want to talk about just the idea of how sometimes when women of color, Black women, we forget to dream big, right? Because you get bogged down so much by what's going on in the world, so many different issues going on. And today I'm so excited to be joined by Emmy Award-winning ABC News correspondent, journalist, author, Lindsay Davis. How you doing, Lindsay?
I am blessed, Brian. Thank you so much for having me on.
Anytime you want to come on. I got to say, I'm a fan. I kind of want to nerd out with you a little bit about news before we get into the book, Girls of the World. Your sixth book, by the way, for everybody that doesn't know. And hopefully you've gone out and grabbed your copy. You know, got it for the bedtime story, got it for the kids book club. Make sure you go out and grab it. But before we get into that, just to nerd out and news a little bit. So I know you did your undergraduate in psychology and your master's in communication. So I feel like you kind of already knew from the jump that you were going into journalism. Both of those come in handy when it comes to being a journalist.
Psychology definitely does. So initially I thought I wanted to be a psychologist. And when I started at University of Virginia, I think, you know, maybe by the second semester, you had to declare your major. And I really just wasn't sure, but I was thinking, oh, you know, I like talking to people and I'd like to help people. And so, you know, I guess I'll be a psychologist. And so I just kind of, you know, quickly checked that box. But then when I was my third year, I studied abroad. And my third year, second semester, studied abroad. And I was in London. It was the first time that I actually had fulfilled all of my prerequisites, all the course requirements for the psychology major. So I was able to take any class that I wanted. And so I took some writing and British literature and journalism classes. And then I was like, this is what I want to do. While I was actually visiting my high school Spanish exchange student, I was in, for some reason, in her apartment by myself watching the news in Spanish and not really understanding as much as I had taken Spanish. I should have known by that point, but couldn't really understand what they were saying in Las Noticias at the time. But I just looked at the screen and said, that's what I want to do. And then I started taking the necessary steps at that point. And you don't need to have a master's degree in order to, you know, get into journalism. But at the time, it's different now, but at the time, in order to have an internship, you had to get it in return for college credit. So I went and got my master's degree just so I could get an internship because I was really too late at that point. And UVA didn't have a communications program at that point. So I went to NYU for grad school really at that point just to be able to get the internship and just started taking the rest is kind of history. And taking the necessary steps in order to do it.
Right. Like you, I love how you talked about how you shift a little bit because sometimes, you know, like the education shifts that you need behind it. A lot of the technology is kind of pushing us forward now where everybody has their way to kind of dive in. But I wanted to ask you, going from like, I loved your interview you did with the cast of Barbie, and then you may go to like a Jonathan Majors, you're at the Oscars. When you're getting into these different zones, you know, maybe sometimes it's a code switch, different things that you go through. How are you, what is your mindset? How do you prep for an interview? Just to give us a little BTS for people that aren't familiar with the interview game, the journalist game.
You know, it's funny, when I was single, people would ask me, what are you looking for? And I would say, somebody with versatility. And I always thought that I was really versatile. And I really love that. It's funny, and it's unusual that in my career, I've never actually had a beat. And I've been doing this for almost 25 years now, but I never was the political reporter or the education or the crime. I was always what they call GA reporter, general assignment. So that meant I was doing whatever the news of day was. And I think that that helped me really be able to pivot from one thing to the next, because any given day, I never knew what was coming at me next. And so I really like, especially because the news can often be so heavy, as you know, I really like being able to have a day where we're just talking about the total eclipse of the sun, or we're talking about, you know, fashion on the red carpet, and just kind of giving us all just a little mental break, a little moment to exhale to absorb the heaviness that we're really used to from day to day. So I'm fortunate that I work with some really great producers who are able to help me with the research and get in the background so that I know, you know, from the designers who are at the Oscars to, you know, the political background of you know, a particular, you know, State of the Union or Super Tuesday. And that I feel like I'm read in and I'm prepared for anything that the news, the day may bring.
Yeah, and listen, I'm telling you, prepared. When you hit the question, I feel like I'm the one getting asked on the other side of it when it comes in. Because I think your delivery is so direct and straightforward, which some people don't do. But it's like, it's an amazing reaction to see the interviewee on the other side. You know, what their response is going to be, just kind of watching some of your interviews. But going from news into going into the book, into the author side, really, Girls of the World, one of the lines that I love, because there's a little black girl at a news desk, which I love. It's so cute. And it says, it's time to make right all the things that are wrong. And I kind of want to know, I kind of want to get into your headspace a little bit here, or how you went about this book. But why did you feel like it was time now to write about this and you know, to help girls to see that they can dream and keep their dreams going?
You know, there are really a number of answers to that question. One thing I'm mindful of is, as I often am, you know, in the realm of doing political stories and news of day, especially as we're kind of counting down already to the big, you know, presidential election in November. But, you know, I'm often thinking about how we've never had a female president of the United States and how we're supposed to be, you know, this advanced, you know, country. And there are many, you know, what we consider third world countries who are already beat us to the punch, already have had, you know, a female prime minister or president, and how we're really just so lacking. And so there are still so many of these, you know, highest glass ceilings that have yet to be cracked, or where we're still measuring the first, you know, we're still able to count, you know, in many scenarios, like this woman is going to be the first to ever X, right? And it feels yeah. like we should be beyond that in 2024. And even if you look at, you know, the CEOs of the Fortune 500 company, and just about 10% of them are run by women. I think at this moment, there's only one Black female who runs of these 500 companies who's the CEO. And so there just still is so much. And so when you point out that particular page, it's time to make right all the things that are wrong. There's still so many things and where we're just not on level playing field yet. And it's kind of surprising to me. And I have a son who just turned 10. And, you know, even early on, he would talk to me about like, oh, that's for girls, you know, or pink, a certain color is for girls. And I'm, you know, not doing that. I'm not taking that party bag because that's for girls. And even, you know, one day I was saying to him, like, hey, let me show you how to make, you know, you love to eat waffles. Let me show you how to make the batter. And he's like, no, mom, like, I don't need to know. And I was like, well, how are you going to live when you get older? You know, how are you going to eat? He said, oh, my wife is going to cook, you know, and these are not things that we have, you know, put into his mind, at least intentionally, my husband and I, as far as the boxes and the divisions, lines between males and females. And I think it's just by society, you know, they say that a lot more is caught than taught. And I think that he's picking up these social cues about what is for men and what's for women and those labels. And so as I was hearing him talk about that, I was thinking, whoa, you know, we need a reset here. And I think that it's also equally important for girls to get those seeds planted early on that, yeah, I can. And why I feel this, you know, so personally is that my parents, you know, I was either silly enough or smart enough to believe them when they told me I could do anything I wanted to do. And I think that quite often, because I didn't have that worldview of, oh, this is for girls, this is for boys, you throw like a girl, you know, those kinds of statements that we make about girls are often negative, right? You throw like a girl, but boys will be boys. And that means, you know, any kind of behavior that boys do, that's acceptable. And
right,
yeah. And I think that because of those labels that we see, I really didn't want other girls to grow up. I wanted some kind of counter narrative to really give girls a deeper sense of who they are, what they can do, what they can be. And not limit it to a box based on their gender.
What is that part of the dream gap you talk about? Or what do you mean when you say dream gap in the book?
Oh, well, I think that we have different expectations for our dreams, what we can dream to be just based on our gender. I mean, I think that that often can be even based on our race. You know, there's so many things that we put in many cases because society maybe tells us what the extent of our dreams can be.
Yep.
And that's where the faithful side of me comes in, where it's like, you know, I know that God can dream bigger dreams for us than we have for ourselves. And I just want to be open to that. I don't want to close off what, you know, and put limits and ceilings on what I can do. Yeah. And I do think that there is a gap between our dreams and quite often as males versus females. I mean, even with just to go back to the politics of it a little bit, you know, if we all thought and believed and acted as though we are equal, you would have candidates running for president in equal amount, men and women. But, you know, it's quite often that you have the females who are the outliers that are, who are the one yeah. person who are running. And it shouldn't be that way, really, right? I mean, it should be 50-50 if all things are equal.
Yeah, absolutely. And just that it's, I love how it's like, there's so many, like, first of all, the illustrations are beautiful. Shout out to Lucy Fleming, who's doing the illustrations.
Yes.
But just the idea of seeing just like these little girls of color in the science lab, You know, they're maybe they're handing out flyers because you're thinking of, you know, being class president, like you said, just putting that image inside of them. What I'm curious, the book has been out for a month now. What has been some of the reactions you've seen of like just highlighting and just like you said, it's just the idea of women keeping that dream, knowing that they can dream, you know, despite society putting limits or not putting that image out there for them.
You know, what's been really nice to hear is, and I've heard it a few times now from adult women who said, I wish that I had this book when I was growing up. I wish I had had this messaging when I was a little girl. And I think that that's the best compliment that I can get. And, you know, a colleague of mine, I had given her a copy of the book, and she had her daughter read it that night, and she videotaped it. And her daughter just started making a mantra, a chant out of, we are brave, we are brave. And she just got stuck on that and just kept saying that. And I love that. I mean, that
Yeah,
is
that's cute.
thrilling to think that, you know, that is subliminally getting into her psyche. And I think that quite often when we have words like that, we very intentionally, I use very intentionally in this book, like brave, strong, bold, ambitious. And those are often words that when women, when those girls grow up to become women, you know, oh, she's too bossy, she's too ambitious. And those are things that we don't hear associated with men. You know, he's a boss, right? And that's a good thing. He's super ambitious, that's a good thing. But when those are assigned, those same words are assigned to women, it can have a negative connotation. And that's a problem. And I'm really trying to kind of turn that concept on its head.
Well, listen, going into that, this the fact that your sixth book, and I'm trying to hear, is there a seventh book coming out? Are you working on a
Not
seventh book? Because
yet, not
I feel
yet.
like you
I'm
don't stop. I feel
pausing.
like you're busy.
I'm pausing for a minute, trying to catch my breath for a moment.
Well, we definitely love it to be able to see you to the news, the author of it all. I want to mention though, because speaking of keeping it going, keeping it pushing to the next level, ABC News Live, streaming the news. First of all, everybody, you know, it's always a freak out when it comes to the new technology, what we're moving to.
Yes.
What has been like, what have you noticed the most? I mean, I for one love to be able to pull up Instagram and be like, okay, I can see the story Lindsay is covering right now, and we go with that, right? But what has been the biggest change from you being in the business for so many years and seeing that change?
Oh, well, the biggest change is that the real estate of it all has been, that's the game changer, is that before, you know, you were hard pressed just to get maybe a 70-second story on World News or Good Morning America, because you know you had commercial breaks and you only had, you know, World News, for example, which is a 30-minute show. By the time you have the commercials, you really are condensed to 22 minutes, and you have maybe eight correspondents vying to tell their stories in those spots. And now with the advent of streaming, you can have a 18-minute long story if you want. Now all of a sudden it's like the landscape has changed, and so you're able to really tell in-depth stories and really fulfilling, gratifying stories that answer all the questions. Because quite often, if you got to get something jamming into 70 seconds, you're not seeing it in the most fulsome way. And now you can take the time and really flesh it out and get a greater understanding. And so, you know, we always talk about on ABC News Live Prime, the story, the show that I host, that we're giving context and analysis to the day's top headlines. So quite often in, you know, a 22-minute show, you might be able to get the headlines out there, but now we're able to break this down into how does this impact you? What do you need to know? What's the, you know, what are the different angles? Let's go down the rabbit hole a little bit for what this means and the consequences long term that this could have. And so I just feel like when I was a local reporter, you know, just kind of getting my news chops, I'd always have the stories that I was just assigned because, you know, we had to tell the story of the day. And the photographer and I, who would spend so much time together, would say, you know, we wish we could tell this story and really get some time to tell this story. And it's like from my lips to God's ears, because the thing that I had dreamt that didn't even seem to be a possibility at that time, now I'm getting to tell those stories, which is just the ultimate for a news person like myself to be able to really, you know, roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty and tell it and give it the time that it deserves.
Yeah, and you know, as scary that social media can be, it's also like, I think so such an interesting way to fact check, right? Like you have so many different sources that you can go to you know, to really flesh out a story. If you hear a headline, well, tell me more about that. Tell me, you know, who is really at the front of the story that you don't always get when you're just kind of bouncing through the headlines. So I think it's such a cool use of technology.
Exactly. I think that, you know, it can be to our detriment in some ways. And we're talking about artificial intelligence and manipulating the truth that's out there and the misinformation. But it can be also, you know, we're able to shine a light and see, like, even just, you know, as we've seen when it was too dangerous, for example, at times to, hold on one second. When it was too dangerous at times to go into Gaza, for example, for our news crews, that you were able to actually have some of the residents there on the ground, you know, do their own reporting just from, you know, the power of social media to get that messaging out to really kind of tell the other side of the story.
Yeah, I it's like so much information. Sometimes I can feel like overload, but I love that we have like these different avenues that we could go to and really kind of center it. And like you said, if you don't know something about Gaza, if the political season is hitting, we're in the middle of it right now, there are ways for people to go out and find out information and really get down to the facts instead of just being like, hey, I got to sit down at this TV set at this certain time. You know, exactly. There's other ways to get this information out to keep people informed. Lindsay, this has been so much fun talking to you. I really appreciate the time. I gotta say though, you know, having that former news, that background for myself, I didn't like the exercise, but exercise helped me kind of with the stress reliever and everything. And I love how I found out, I was like, she runs half marathons year round. First of all, how do you have time for that? And second of all, when did it start?
So yeah, my husband and I are in the process of running a half marathon in all 50 states. And this weekend we're about to do our 44th in Salt Lake City.
Wow.
And so we actually met because of our passion for running. And so it's something that we have just really determined that I think that when you're passionate about something, you'll make time for it. And so it's something that we have really dedicated to really saying, okay, we are going to commit to doing this. And it really is, as you described it, it's a great stress reliever because I work in such a high pace, fast world all the time. And this is a way I can just kind of disconnect. And it's also a healthy thing as But, you know, I can just kind of be alone with my thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's crazy. Listen, I need to go do some stretches or something because it makes me feel like I'm not doing anything. I'm just trying to get my, you know, my 30 minutes a couple times a week, you know, how I go. So, you know what? I'm gonna work on that, but I appreciate your time. You guys go get girls of the world right now. Like I said, you want to add this, you know, sit down. With the babies, you know, sit down with it, just like really educate and just inspire women today. Okay. Today, let's just inspire women to keep pushing, you know, no matter what. And Lindsay, I appreciate the time so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds podcast. My name is Jamie. I'm your host along with Ryan, and we have yet another X-Men 97 recap for you. Woohoo! We're doing it. We're in there with these recaps. I'm so proud of us.
Yeah, we are. Mm-hmm. We're keeping it going.
So we are recapping episode 6, Life Death Part 2, which, woo! This was something else. I swear, this show just gets better and better with every episode.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yep. Absolutely.
The writing is groundbreaking. The storylines are so dramatic. I just love it. And then there's memeable lines, which we'll get to in this recap, but there's lines that just go viral that everybody talks about. And I love the fact that, and thank God that this show is on Disney Plus and not like on a Netflix where they just throw all the episodes at once, because it gives us a chance to marinate and to reflect and to be able to have those water cooler moments where we can talk about these episodes and really do these deep dives, you know, for some of us, to talk about what this episode was all about. So I'm glad that we're having these weekly broadcast dates for X-Men 97.
Yeah, smart. Very smart thinking on their part.
Indeed. So Life, Death, Part Two, there are two parallel stories that are happening between Charles Xavier and Lilandra, their relationship, as well as Storm and Forge's relationship, which is just so well done. Chef's finger kiss here. So well
Yeah,
done.
I love these love and drama that we're getting.
It's like daytime soaps, but just on a higher, deeper level. Just so good, you know? I mean, MCU, Kevin Feige, MCU. I mean, Kevin Feige's a part of this, but like you got to be looking at the live action MCU in this show and be like, bruh, take some notes, get some folks from the writer's room on X-Men 97 and throw them out there on the studio lot for Marvel Studios on the live action joint, because y'all need some help right now. Okay, so anyway, back to X-Men 97.
Yeah, we could do a whole other episode on that.
We really could. We really could. So we open with the Shi'ar versus the Kree Empire, and we also see Ronan the Accuser, who's a villain that's actually appeared in the MCU, played by actor Lee Pace, which was really cool. Again, I love that we're seeing a little bit of a mix of some of the characters that we've seen from the animated series, some of that we've seen from the MCU that's in X-Men 97. So he and his soldiers, they're ultimately defeated by the Imperial Guard. And with them is Deathbird, who we are going to be talking about, throughout this recap. But woo, Deathbird is definitely someone who's got some personality. She is the sister of Lilandra, who is in a relationship with Charles Xavier. And Charles Xavier and Lilandra, so we find out in this episode that Charles Xavier is alive, which I told you, I called it. I was like,
This guy.
he ain't dead. I don't think Charles Xavier is dead. So he is on the astral plane, like in this spatial world or whatever, with Lilandra, and they chilling. They living their best lives right now. And Deathbird is actually the sister of Lilandra, and she's in her feelings right now. She ain't too happy because of the fact that Lilandra plans to wed Charles Xavier. And Charles actually hints to Lilandra that he wants to return back to Earth. And Lilandra is against it. So I'm going to stop there because there's a lot to unpack here between us finding out that number one, Charles Xavier's alive. He's with Lilandra. They're in this relationship. Deathbird, who is Lilandra's sister, does not even like them being together. And we find out that Charles Xavier, even though he's, in this great courtship and in love with Lilandra, he wants to go back to Earth.
Yeah, they hit us with so much at the beginning of this. Like when they started out with the Kree, I was back in my Captain Marvel bag. I was just like,
Yeah.
"What?" I was like, "Are we getting a little bit of Kree action?" And they're a formidable opponent, so I got nervous. I was like, "What's going on here? What are we doing?" So I like that. I like the introduction of them. But yeah, Deathbird, she is. It's interesting. I'm not familiar with her at all. So I was getting the
Same.
vibes of like, just maybe get out my way. She just want to run the whole show. She ain't really feeling Leandra the Empress the way she running Turin right now. Like she's not really feeling it. She kind of like, I got things I need to do. Like you calling me talking about your wedding announcement. I'm over here trying to lay these guys out. I got things to do, so get out my way. So she from the get-go was just like not to be played with. The costume is crazy. So yeah, it was leading all the way with just like force and power and intimidation. And I gotta say, I'm here for it. I mean, at some time she was doing a lot for me, but I gotta say I was here for her entrance. I appreciated it. And Charles, he was at. Like Jamie said, she called it. I was like, where you been? What you doing? Like we had the whole Genosha thing, like where you been hiding, what's going on? So he definitely need to go check on his children. I'm just saying, he definitely need to go. He can't be here right now. I understand, he got him a bae now. You know, he got a different world, but I'm just saying, we might need you to go back and check on the X-Men, check on your children, see what's going down, because you done missed a lot. So yeah, it was a lot.
It was a lot. And also, Charles is wearing this like exoskeleton suit that allows him to walk.
Yeah, that's cool, yeah.
So that was, you know, so we're seeing a little bit of a different Charles Xavier in this astral plane space that they're in. I don't know exactly what the name of this location or where it is where they're at, but anyways,
yeah,
I'll just say that they're on the astral plane because that's all I know. So then we move to our next parallel story, which is Storm and Forge. So Storm right now, she's still powerless, and Forge is injured from the previous episode. His injury was caused by the adversary, and Storm is tending to his injuries. She sees that it was some sort of like demonic infection that was caused by the adversary, and the adversary is still trying to get inside of Storm's head, telling her to leave Forge, because according to the adversary, Forge is the reason why she lost her powers. So she's really just mentally in a state of imbalance. And just sort of a side note here, Allison Seeley Smith, who's the voice of Storm, also was the voice of the adversary, which I found to be very interesting because, you know, the adversary is sort of like this subconscious in her mind, or, you know, I guess there's like the dark side of like when you have these thoughts, these negative thoughts, which is sort of like the dark side or the dark consciousness of your mind speaking negative things to you. That's what the adversary was doing to her in these moments. So to have her actual voice speaking to her through the adversary, I just thought that was kind of interesting and neat that they had Allison Seeley Smith voice that villain. So I'm going to stop there because I feel like that's a lot as well with Storm and Forge. We see them, and then the adversary, and then Storm sort of just kind of dealing with all of the mental abuse that the adversary is giving her.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what to feel about Forge. I mean, I'm here for the drama, you know, and I know this is one path into Storm's journey, but I don't know. I mean, the dude don't really seem like he doing much of anything right now. Like, he was trying to bring her powers back, then it backfired. You know, he kind of, you know, air quotes, I guess, kind of created a machine that took her powers away, you know, like, so he could be blamed for that as well. I don't really know what the brother is adding, but, you know, if we got to keep the storyline going, you know, I'm not really seeing the play. I'm just more here for like, just do what you have to do to help Storm out, because she's dealing with this right now. You injured, she got to take care of you. So I was more for that. I was like, whatever he's doing for this plot device, I guess we're going to use him. But for me, I'm not really seeing in the pull on it. And yeah, Allison, she made this one of my favorite episodes because I love her. I think it's amazing that she got to play the adversary and Storm, and you get to see that battle, and it's fun. Like it's fun, like you said, to just, you know, see her play with that dark side, that demon side, and then she's like, you know, on the other turn is Storm, and Storm is scared, and you know, she can't really defend herself like she used to. She's deciding between life and death that we get to have, or living life to the fullest and not having your power of being human. So it's a cool dynamic to be able to see. But yeah, I was here for it. I was like, shout out to Allison, girl, keep doing your thing. You know, I'm glad the voices don't crack because you was killing it. It was a lot of fun to be able to hear her on this. So yeah.
She sounds just like Storm from back in, what was it, 1992 was when the show first aired. And I think I've said this before, when I first read Storm in the comics, I've always read her voice as Allison Seeley Smith's voice, because X-Men, the animated series, was my gateway into comics. So, you know, I always heard her voice. And then when I went to read the comics, I would just read it in her voice. So I just think that it's so awesome that we get to still have her here with us to be able to continue on in X-Men 97. So, interesting story so far with that aspect of life, death. But then we got to go back to our parallel story back to Charles and Lalandra. So back on Shi'ar, Deathbird, she poses a challenge in order to allow this wedding, because she really don't want it to happen. So she's like, I challenge you, between Lalandra and Charles. And the challenge is that Charles has to purge all his memories of Earth in order to prove his loyalty to the Shi'ar Empire. Charles is really not about this. Like, he's really hesitant to do it. And he knows that he must purge his memories if he wants to marry Lalandra. But if he doesn't, Deathbird could take Shi'ar, the throne, away from Lalandra, and that could cause even more problems. So he's in a bit of a conundrum with this. So I'm going to stop here, because this moment has one of the most interesting scenes. There's actually a scene that happens with Lalandra and Charles where they're walking through the throne room, and he refers to, or does she refer to him, or he's being referenced as a pet? And
yeah.
and Lalandra says, oh, hush now, beloved, you may bark later. And I just was like, okay, we're really going there with this dialogue. Like, at this point, I don't even know if this show is for kids. I feel like this show is for us adults that watched this show as kids, and where we get the innuendos. And if kids watch this show, that's great, because it's going to go way over their heads. But I just like the fact that this show really leans in to the adult themes. So, what did you think about Deathbird and her proposal to Charles and Lalandra?
I don't know. I mean, Deathbird, she could be necessary. She'd be okay to run it. I don't know. She look crazy too, though. I don't know how far the crazy goes.
She's trying to balance crazy. It out. She's like, racist.
There you go. I mean, you know, I don't know. It's like, yeah, when you get to the, I'm forgetting about the racist part. So yeah, I think we got to have to throw out because of that. Yeah. We're going to have to throw out for the racist part of it. But, I mean, she definitely, like I said, from the beginning, she was definitely given leader, or she wanted to be the leader. You know, as with any leader, there's always that, if you can't be checked, here's the thing with Blackbird. If you can't be, or Deathbird, if you can't be checked, then there's a problem with you leading, right? So yes. She goes, so like you said, the racism, the things that come on her, obviously she don't care nothing about this Empress. This supposed to be your sister. She don't care nothing about, girl, you could just go and walk off somewhere off a cliff or something. She'd be all right. Like, she's not worried about it. She just wants to rule this. That's how her family ties go. So I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like with her and the Empress, I kind of feel like the Empress kind of gives her, you know, like that benefit of the doubt, right? Like, it's her sister. She kind of feels like she has the reins, but girl, I'm telling you right now, you do not. You better watch her. The way this goes. So yeah, she definitely needs to be kept arm's distance. She's not, because she has that power thirst. But yeah, the Empress is gonna have to watch out for her. As far as Charles, I mean the whole time I'm thinking, go back to Earth and be with the X-Men. But I get his, like, he's caught up in this new world now. They want him to be this peacekeeper, right? You know, or the Empress wants him to be this peacekeeper now. You know, he saved them in the past, you know, with like the Phoenix and all that kind of stuff. But there's obviously this hate, because he's not one of them, right? Like, you're wanting him to rule. You're wanting him to be by your side, because I feel like she needs the help, or she feels the power that he has. But at the same time, you can't have your people like, well, who is this dude? Like, why am I having to like answer to him? He doesn't really understand, you know, like in their minds, he doesn't really understand their journey and what they've been through. Right. You know, in their culture, so to speak, and what they represent. So they're just like, well, why do we need to listen to him? So in my mind, in that instance, I'm thinking, well, if it's not too much he can do here, if they're not going to listen to him, I think you need to go back with the X-Men, who clearly right now need your help. Like, there's some things going down and he doesn't know about yet. But, you know, she's trying to throw out her, you know, her flirtatiousness, and she got him like mesmerized right now where he can't leave. But the whole time I'm thinking through the scene, I'm like, boy, you need to go back. You need to go back and say, now that we know that you're alive, you know, take your exoskeleton and get back down to Earth. Like, we need you other way, you know, somewhere else. So it was, I don't know. I mean, the whole scene was just, it was a lot going on. It was a lot of drama that we needed, I guess. It was a lot of love and drama that we needed. But yeah, I just took away from watch Death Bird and Xavier get back down to Earth. That's what I took away.
Yeah, I'm curious to know if that exoskeleton is something that he can use on Earth, or he can only use that on the astral plane.
That's a good question.
Yeah,
that's a good question. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I hope so. That would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool, but I have a feeling he can only probably use it up there. But we'll see. We'll see. Let's see what happens in these next episodes. So Storm and Forge, they make their way through the cave as this is where the cactus grows. And this cactus is going to heal Forge's injury. And Forge points out that it was once a weapons depot during the Civil War. And before revealing that Storm has to go ahead by herself, he advises that it's going to be in a tight space in order for you to retrieve this this cactus medicinal thing that he needs in order to be healed. So as we know from the comics and the animated series, Storm is claustrophobic. So this is going to prove to be very challenging for her to go through this tight space in order to retrieve this cactus. Xavier and Lilandra, in the meantime, they're set up to begin a ritual which will begin to purge all of his memories of the Earth, Charles's memories of the Earth. And sensing his hesitation, Deathbird and her forces begin to attack. And Xavier uses his powers to pull everyone into a classroom setting on the astral plane. I'm going to stop there because this scene has one of the most epic lines in all of animation history. Deathbird. So we find out in this scene that Deathbird and the Shi'ar people are very racist. They do not like who Charles Xavier is and who the mutants are. And she refers to Earth as a Milky Way ghetto, which I find to be okay. Sis, who are you? And what was so funny about that line and just even that that moment was her face. Like when she says, and even the tone of how she says it, when she says Milky Way ghetto, the way she emphasizes the word ghetto just took me out. And then you see her eyes open up. Like she is really repulsed by who Charles is and what he represents. And there's even a line where she refers to him and his people as having inferior freak fluids. So she's very clear about how she feels. And there's even a part where Charles is like saying the quiet part out loud, where clearly she said the quiet part real loud and how she feels about Charles. So yeah, let me know, what are your thoughts about Deathbird, her comments, this Milky Way ghetto line, which has gone viral, and also the fact that, you know, Xavier has this moment, which after this scene ends, he has this moment where he goes and harnesses his power and pulls everyone into this classroom setting on the astral plane.
Yeah, I love the way that looked, and like that transition of getting pulled into the classroom on the astral plane. I like that it was on the astral plane, because it was just, first of all, we love to see Xavier back in his teaching bag, right? Like when he's getting ready to lay down a lesson, we love to see that. You know, he's rocking the suit, he's ready to go. I like there was, I forgot which one it was, but I like one time, well, it might have been Deathbird, where he threw like an apple to like shut the person up, or he threw an apple or something like in the class, like he uses like mind powers or something to throw an apple at somebody. But I just like all the little like nuances of the scene and how he was like not to be played. He was like, listen to my lesson, stop talking, everybody sit down, listen to what I need to teach you. Like, I don't have time for you to be making little comments, as we know that Deathbird likes to do. And yeah, she was doing too much with the Milky Way ghetto line. We already know Deathbird just be doing, she'd be doing the most. It's like, girl, calm down. Like, you can get your rain, but you ain't got to step on everybody else till you get there. But yeah, she is not feeling the people on earth. But see, this is what I'm saying. This is why I see what Xavier's trying to teach them. You know, he's trying to be the peacemaker. He's trying to say, listen, y'all need to evolve.
Yes.
Y'all need to understand. I understand this. I see what he's trying to do. But to me, it was just in the back of my head the whole time. I was like, you need to go back to earth. Like, there's other things to be focused on, other things to do. Like, these people is not ready for this. They just not prepared. They is not ready for this moment. So you just need to step back. But I
But
understand. I mean, we
that
all
is his
know.
name. But that's his nature. He's always peacemaker. Like, because you know, everyone always compares Magneto and Charles Xavier to Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. So he is like the Martin Luther King, where he wants to preach nonviolence. So in this moment where they want to attack him and use violence to communicate a message, he instead is like, I'm going to take the high road. I'm going to be like, I'm going to teach you guys a lesson. So let me go ahead and harness my telepathic powers and create a psychic-like, I don't know what, maybe a psychic-like dimension where it looks like a classroom, and actually preach to you and teach you guys how things are done. So that's just his nature. He's always going to be that way because he is a leader, he is a teacher, he is a mentor, he is all of those things. And I completely understand why he took that path as opposed to just being like, well, I gotta run and go to Earth to get the X-Men to help me out with this. Like, no, he's gonna lead by example.
And I like another point that they made too, as you mentioned about the wipe, trying to wipe his memories and everything like that. Try to forget about the X-Men or kind of leave that in the past. I just think that was such an important lesson of not leaving, just because you have this new phase of your life, right? You got your new boo or whatever like that. It's not acceptable for somebody to erase who you are, right? What's a fundamentally part of you? Your past, what makes you, the people that you care about. I can fit into your new life as me. Like, you can't be trying to erase who I am to fit in. So I love how, like, different age groups, like you said, some of the stuff might go over the kids' head, which is good. If they don't get some of the other stuff, that's good. But taking in some of these lessons, I think, will be important as people kind of watch this, because the animation can kind of pull people in from all different kind of ages looking at this. So hopefully they'll take that lesson away, because I thought that was very important with them, like, listen, he can do all this kind of stuff. And like him even, like you said, going to teach, that's all part of him. Like, if she wants to be with him and she wants him to rule, this is what you're getting. Like, you're not gonna be able to change, certain aspects about who he is and think he's just gonna fit into y'all little society and y'all like disrespecting everybody on earth. So yeah,
I mean,
I love that.
that Ryan, you bring up such a strong and really important point, and that's why this writing is just so impeccable, because you're right. Like, you know, it's easy for us to be like, I want to forget the past. I just want to erase it. I want to forget that none of that happened, and I want to start a new life. And for a lot of us, things that's happened in our past really does hurt. You know, things that have happened in the past has scarred us and sometimes causes us to stumble from moving forward. But also, the past is something that has helped us build our character and has helped shaped us to who we are today. So sometimes you can't forget that. And I think that that's a really cool lesson that we learn in this episode through Charles Xavier's story, is that he, even though he has an opportunity to have his past erase, which none of us as human beings ever do, he chooses not to do that because that past is a part of his DNA. It's a part of who he is. It's a part of his character, and he doesn't want to let that go. And I just think that that's a really important lesson to really focus on going forward. So yeah, I'm glad that you touched on that because it's just now kind of resonating with me. I'm like, wow, yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah, so okay. So Storm and Forge, they return to the cabin and she got the cactus juice. And she was oh wait, I'm so sorry. I have skipped. So we're inside of the tight space because she hasn't gotten the cactus juice yet. So we're inside of the tight space. Storm is, once again, she is confronted by the adversary. And Storm, she, refuses that the demonic entity that uses its power to enclose the space
is around Storm. She's, you know, trying to resist. And what Storm does is she summons her inner strength and she pushes back against the adversary. She reaches inside of herself and she overcomes her fear and she just regains her powers and she gets it all back. And we see her in her pride, I think it's Pride of the X-Men, classic uniform, her hair fully, you know, flowing, those tendrils are flowing down past her shoulders, and we see the classic Pride of the X-Men regalia outfit, and she's flying. We see the thunderbolts, the storm, and even we see like a windstorm that's coming up from the earth and like in a spiral that goes up, which I think is a really interesting parallel because she's like underground and then we see storm that goes upward like to the earth, so going north and south at the same time. But I'm gonna stop there because that's a lot. Like Storm finds something in herself that allows her to unleash these powers, so it's almost as if she never really lost her powers, that they were always in her. She just had to tap into her mind mentally to know that she always had it in her. And the adversary, I guess, was the thing that had to trigger it. So, yeah, what were your thoughts about this confrontation with the adversary in this very tight space where she's claustrophobic and she's dealing with all of this?
Yeah, this series owes me nothing after this scene. I'm just going to tell you right now, because I was so in my feelings when she lost her power that I was just waiting for my moment. I was like, when is the moment? When is the scene coming back? So needless to say, I absolutely loved everything. But yeah, it's just the idea of being in that tight space. It's like the rock climbing of it all, right? Like, I just can't imagine, like, I'm not claustrophobic, but I can't imagine you in that space. You know, you're trying to crawl up. You don't really have too much to hold on to. You got the, because she was like, not today, demon, but you got the demon like right in your face, like, oh, you can give into this fear. Don't worry about it. I got you. Don't push anymore. Just give in. And Lord, for a Black woman, don't that remind us every single day? So I thought it was such a moment, you know, to be able to see, you know, her push through that. Like, there's so many different elements against her. And she finally has this moment where she's like, wait a minute, what am I doing? I'm Storm, right? Like, what are, you know, and I love that line where she's like, let them thunder because I am lightning. And, you know, just everything starts shaking, you know, and I just love, and I think that's what we always, you know, love about her, what she signifies. The uniform was absolutely great. It was giving me Regal. I love the long hair that was flowing. You can never go wrong with that, like, the floating over the water scene. I feel like they've done that a couple times. You know, like, Photon did a scene like that. Like, I feel like you can never go wrong. It just looks so epic and powerful to have that kind of scene and just, like, all the elements around her. You know, like, the wind funnels, the lightning. I love, like, how we end on that tight shot of her face with the lightning coming down. It's just epic. So yeah, I love the whole thing. And like I said, it's just such a great message of just fight, like just keep pushing, you know, no matter what you have to do, just keep fighting, keep pushing, even though, you know, and she just realized that she was just, and sometimes you don't realize how much fear is holding you back, right? Like you don't realize how much you're internalizing it and what's preventing you from the doing. So just to be able to see her have that moment was good. And again, what is Forge doing? Will somebody explain to me, dude is still laying on the bottom of this, you know, wherever they at in this cave. You know, I know he's injured, but I'm like, come on now. But he's still just chilling out there. But hey, at least she got the cactus juice. She'll be able to come back and save him now, help him out. So, you know, but I'm just saying, y'all, I don't see what he's helping out yet, but I'm waiting.
Yeah, I mean, he's injured right now, so he's a little incapacitated. And I feel like they probably needed to make this story, they needed to create a story for Storm to be able to get through this plot device. So it's like, instead of Forge actually doing the work of going through the tight space and finding the cactus juice, let it be Storm so she can have her moment. But I mean, I think my only small little tiny criticism, and you probably might be like, I disagree with you, Jamie, is I kind of felt like they sped run through Storm's story a little bit here because, in the comics, she's without her powers for quite some time. And I know that a lot of fans are a little bit, concerned about the fact that she's not in the opening credits and they really want to see her with her powers. And I do too, don't get me wrong, but there's some really great stories that happen with Storm when she's not, when she's without her powers, including a great storyline that happens where she's actually fighting Cyclops for leadership of the X-Men. That happens also when she's still powerless. So I don't know. I kind of would have liked to have seen that play out in X-Men 97, but I totally understand if that's a lot to unpack in this series that we're getting, because we're getting a lot. We're getting a lot of storylines here. And I think even Travis in previous episodes felt, he said that he felt like it was kind of like the pacing was going a little too fast. So that's my only criticism is like I would have liked for them to go a little bit longer on her being without her powers. But I'm excited that she's got them back as well. So
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like with the X-Men, it's never enough time, right? Like they have so many different storylines. They can't fit all, with our amount of episodes. But yeah, I mean, me personally, I wait for my whole Storm series, movie, give
there
me
you go.
something. Like I'm, you
There
know what
you
I mean?
go.
Like I'm waiting on that. So,
There
but
you go.
yeah, I just feel they definitely, you know what, you are gonna feel those. Like even being as big a fan as I am, and I love that scene. Yeah, I wanna see it. You could go a little bit longer because we know it's Storm. If you're gonna have this whole X-Men and this whole evolution of X-Men, ain't no way you're gonna get away with not bringing her back, not giving her powers. But yeah, I just think they're in this weird with this series, with the way we have to consume media and all blah blah blah. We can do whole two episodes on that. But just them having to compact everything down, and there's so many, so many avenues you can go with the X-Men, so many cool comic stories, so many different arcs that I just think they run out of time, like quite frankly. But to actually get to the point or get her to the point that they want her to be by the time we get to that last episode. And so, and I don't know if they have a plan to go back, hopefully they have a, maybe they have a plan where they're gonna switch it up on us and,
I mean,
maybe we get to go back.
they're definitely taking some I wouldn't say creative liberties because they have been pretty close to the source material. But then again, like nobody expected the Gambit death. Like that was a gut punch. And I am one of because I've seen a lot of people on social media and stuff say, oh no, Gambit's gone. He's done. Like, that's it. I disagree completely. I
Yeah, I do too.
feel actually, I feel 100% confident that Gambit is going to be back. And that's only because we saw Cable appear in that last episode. So if Cable didn't appear in that episode, then I'd be like, maybe he ain't coming back. But there will be some I can't even speak. There will be some time travel shenanigans happening where he will be back because of that. And that to me indicates that he'll be okay. That's why I put out like this little meme on social media with Gambit and someone looking shocked that he's dead. And then the Denzel Washington gif where he's like he's so relieved and he puts his hand on his chest. And it's Cable's face next to, because it's like, okay, Cable's gonna, take us back into time and everything's gonna be okay. But we'll talk more about Gambit later because there's some other theories out there as well as we get into this latter part of the episode. So Storm and Forge, they return to the cabin. And yes, at this point, she has the cactus juice, right? And she's able to heal Forge. And she has this beautiful dialogue about, having these inner demons within and just being able to purge that out of you. And I don't have it word for word, but it's really beautiful dialogue that we hear from
Yeah,
Storm
absolutely.
as she articulates how she was able to retrieve her powers back. Storm and Forge then turn on the TV only to see the aftermath of the Genosha attack that's happening on the news, which, whew, that's a whole other thing that's going on. So then back on the astral plane, Charles Xavier compares the Shi'ar's imperial forces to those that are found on Earth. This is while he's still in this classroom setting. He notes that the Shi'ar has cut down young civilizations before they can grow, only to offer them peace. And his lesson is interrupted by a deadly vision as everyone in the classroom turns into skeletons. So this is parallel to what is currently happening in Genosha. And he sees a giant gambit turning into bones. And he knows what this means, and he's immediately upset. I'm going to stop here, and I'll comment on this, because he sees Gambit, which is an indication of death, right? Because Gambit is seen, yeah. And then there's bones. But he doesn't see Magneto, which I find to be interesting, because Magneto allegedly perished in Genosha. So to me, that indicates Magneto is definitely alive. And then for other people, you could arguably say, well, then Gambit really is dead because Charles Xavier saw him. I still disagree with that. I still think that that Cable will be able to reset that death. But it is interesting that he doesn't see Magneto in his vision, and that he sees Gambit. I'll stop there and let me know what your thoughts are on Charles' visions.
Yeah, we got to see Gambit, you know, we got to see Sugar back, right? Like, it can't be in the Gambit. You gotta bring her back. So I'm still rooting. And same. I'm always rooting. Like, I'm always like, no, they're never gone, right? Like, we're in a superhero world, right? We're in the X-Men world. I'm like, no, I can't be gone. So I'm waiting
right.
for her to come back.
Exactly. We're in the X-Men. Well, people can't be dying.
Anna. Right. Yes. But, you know, as far as Magneto, we'll who see. Knows? We know he probably around. I feel
Marla
like he's probably
McTaggart is dead. So that tells me all I need to know. And she's not supposed to die. So, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, that's true. You're right. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's really interesting to see Charles kind of get hit with all this stuff at one time, but I'm glad it's like that reality check of like, okay, I got to come out my teaching bag because I'm about to help y'all later, but I need to get back down because some things are going on. So I like kind of how it pulled him back. And I'm just so curious to know his thoughts, like what's going to happen, you know, when he goes back, you know, that interaction with him and Cyclops, because, you know, Cyclops is thinking running things right now. You know, so, and he always had his thing with Magneto. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see like him coming back, you know, when you got your OG boss coming back, but you've been trying to lead for a minute. So I wonder if that's going to be a thing. There's a lot of heartbreak. So maybe it doesn't even matter. So maybe we'll get to see. So I don't know. I just think it's finally time for everybody to come back. Cause it's been a lot of like soap opera drama. It's been a lot of, you know, loss of powers. You got your baby mama drama. So I think everybody just kind of got to, you know, unite for a little bit to kind of figure out what their next steps is. And then you're still fighting the fact of like on Earth, they don't accept mutants, right? Like you're still fighting that fact on top of like everything else you're dealing with. Exactly. So it's going to be interesting.
It is going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting as to who's dead, who's alive, who has a boo still, who doesn't have a boo.
Yep.
You exactly. know, you know, the baby mama drama, then Mr. Mm-hmm. Sinister is trying to take people's babies. I mean, it's crazy. So we see the skeletal Gambit, who delivers a blast that's similar to that of like a giant sentinel that had attacked Genosha. And Charles's telepathic link is actually broken, and he awakens and he's just completely in distress. And he decides, he vows to return back to Earth, and he senses that there's unrest. So we know now that Charles is going to come back. It is revealed that the attack on Genosha was carried out by Mr. Sinister, and Bolivar Trask was involved and helped out with that. So the episode ends there. I'm going to stop. There's a lot of theories out there about, you know, who the big bad is behind this. Mr. Sinister definitely was involved. Bolivar Trask obviously involved. But then there is a villain out there by the name of Bastion. And I've been hearing this a lot on the interweb. So Bastion is a fusion of Master Mold and Nimrod. And in the opening sequence of this episode, you actually saw Nimrod, who was spotted inside of a sentinel. So, and then Trask at the end of this episode says that he gave his DNA access to Master Mold. So that kind of gives us some clues here that Bastion, and Bastion is a known mutant killer. So he has every reason to want to, enforce this attack on Genosha. So, as far as that's concerned, he's behind it. I'm sure Mr. Sinister, I don't think he is the one that's the ultimate mastermind behind it, but definitely Bastion has every reason to be. And Mr. Sinister is still trying to plan his whole like weird, I want to implant the earth with my DNA or whatever thing that he's trying to do with with the baby DNA stuff, the mutant DNA that he wants to manipulate. So we'll stop there and let me know your thoughts. And that wraps up episode 6, Life Death Part 2 of X-Men 97.
I'm so curious to find out more about Bastion. I think everybody's on to it. There's some good little breadcrumbs they threw down. Obviously, Sinister was, I knew I was waiting for the moment. I was waiting to see how he was involved or what he did because he disappeared too quick, without any kind of resolution. And we know the background he has with the X-Men. And he's always just, I don't know, he's kind of just there, right, to get them crumbs just to kind of torment somebody and carry out. Like, he doesn't really want to be the big mastermind, right? Like, he's just there to see who he can like drag along the path and mess up on the way. So yeah, I can't wait to see what next episode holds. I feel like everybody's finally coming, back to the school, so to speak. They're kind of separated right now a little bit, but I think it's something kind of pulling them all back together. And people had to face some inner demons, some secrets had to be revealed. Now it's kind of it's seeming like it's time to form up on these villains. But I don't know. We could get some other wrenches thrown in, but it seems like now it's time to form up on them. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. Like you said, it hasn't disappointed me yet. The writing is always amazing. The actors is going hard, and the Star Award went to Allison for this one. We're gonna see who's gonna take it next week. So yes, yeah, it's been good to watch.
And another villain to throw out there is also Apocalypse. Apocalypse is definitely on the radar to be involved. So I mean, they're throwing the villains at us.
Oh yeah, these villains didn't come to play. So hopefully everybody's ready. They done took a little break. Hopefully they're good to go. Get us some little time traveling. So people might have to, go back in the future, come back to stop a little bit of it. But yeah, it's really interesting to see the villains that they're picking, the storylines that they're
I love
entangling,
it.
because it's just, yeah, and the cliffhangers just hit you. They just smack every episode, and you're like, why?
I love X-Men villains. X-Men has some of the coolest villains ever. I can't wait to see when Juggernaut shows up. I can't wait to see
Oh,
when
yeah, that's gonna be good.
Sasquatch when he shows up. Like, yeah, I can't wait to see more of these villains come up. And also people are saying that Dr. Cooper, who we saw in the previous episode, that she may be disguised as, that Mystique may be disguised as her. That could be
Oh yeah, I
her.
did see that. Yeah, that'll be interesting too. Yeah.
So we'll see, because Mystique has kind of played both sides between villain and hero.
Yeah, Mystique is definitely interesting.
So yeah, I just can't wait to see where we go with the next episode. The next episode is titled Bright Eyes, which apparently I believe was a reference that Rogue made to Cable in the animated series. And the word on the streets, on the social media streets, is that it's going to be like a Cable, the social media streets, the streets is talking. That it's going to be like a Cable filled episode, which I'm excited for, because if it is a Cable filled episode, which would be good, we may see the time travel shenanigans happening, which could involve Gambit. We'll see, you know,
Fingers crossed,
because
fingers crossed.
if they are speed running through these stories, which I kind of feel like they a little bit are, we might see Gambit return as early as before the end of season one. So we'll see. You know, look, I wasn't wrong about Charles Xavier, so we'll see if I'm proven right about Gambit. I mean, people have wanted, because, you know, I've had my ear to the street. People want to see Gambit dead because they like the idea of this being like a Game of Thrones type of show.
Yeah.
But it's not. This is not George R.R. Martin type of storytelling. Yeah. X-Men has never been about that. Like, in the X-Men comics, characters have died, but they've come back. You know, yeah. Jean Grey has died, but she has come back to life. So, like, it's not, I just don't think it's going to happen where Gambit is going to be gone. Yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like we're in this weird phase of, like, killing all the, killing all the main characters or the characters that really pull at you. And so people are like, oh, they're dead. Now we have to have this person avenge them. You know, it's like this weird thing, like all the shows now, like, you know, I guess you, like you said, it came from like the Game of Thrones conditioning or something, but it's
people,
like, we got to kill
actually
everybody.
Really want these characters to stay dead. I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Right. I'm like, if we can have like a sort of happy ending, let us have a moment here. Like, why are we trying to kill off everybody?
Yeah. Cause there's really great moment. I mean, Gambit has a really great story arc. There's still some great moments between Rogue and Gambit and their relationship that plays out in the comics. So I feel like there's a lot more story to be told with Gambit that X-Men 97 has yet to explore. That's why I'm like, I don't think he's gone. I mean, he's gone in the sense that he's gone in this timeline, but yeah. I feel like Cable is going to bring him back into another timeline where we'll get to see him play out in other episodes. So
yeah,
we'll see what the writers do with that. But in the meantime, we've got next week's episode to look forward to called Bright Eyes. I'm excited. By the way, Nightcrawler had his first opening titles in this episode, which I absolutely love because next to Gambit, he's my other boo. Kurt Wagner, I love him.
Love Triangle, that's what we talk about. Bring it back.
Love Triangle, even though he was in the opening credits, but he wasn't even in the episode. I'm like, really, y'all? How y'all gonna have Nightcrawler?
They give a little shade to your boo. It's all right. Yeah. He'll be back.
Y'all got him in the opening credits, but he ain't in the episode. What was that all about? But hopefully he's there and Bright Eyes and we see him there. I'm always looking forward to these opening credits to see, okay, what are we getting? What Easter eggs are we going to find? Because they're there. And like, if you pay attention closely, you can find a little, you know, breadcrumb, a little Easter egg of what's to come. Like this whole thing with Bastion and seeing Nimrod, like that's a thing. So you got to really pay attention.
Yeah, I don't know who's in charge at Marvel of the breadcrumbs. You know, is there like one person that's just like, okay, we know we're going to drop these hints and see if the audience grabs it for like each show or like each film? I always want to know that.
I know. I mean, they've done a good job with that with the end credit scenes of their live action films.
Yeah.
It would be kind of cool if they would kind of like switch up the formula a bit. And then like in the opening scenes or sequences of their films have like little Easter eggs at the beginning. That would be kind of cool.
That would be, it's hilarious the first time it happens and everybody's like, what? I didn't see it. What? I missed
it. Yeah. So, but we'll see. I really kind of would love to see how the MCU is going to be, if at all, like if they're going to bring in what we see in X-Men 97 into the MCU films, you know, that would be.
I hope so, but it's taking them a long time to do that. But at least I guess that's why everybody's so hyped about this. But I hope so. Like, I hope they find a way to be able to do that. Like,
they really need to.
Where it's smooth.
Yeah, because I mean, They said, oh, well, these films aren't doing well because of superhero fatigue. Well, we know that's not true now because everybody right now is just like full of energy and excited over X-Men 97. And it's because it's just really good storytelling, And I think it's storytelling that actually is smart. It speaks to real issues. Like you can literally take the attack on Genosha and compare it to what's happening in Palestine, or you know what I'm saying? Like you can compare it to news events of countries and cities that have been attacked. And it's just like I just love the real parallels of, or even just the idea of the X-Men in general, that these mutants are this marginalized group of people that are ostracized. And folks like, oh gosh, I'm now drawing a blank of some of the names, but like just the racism of like Deathbird, and those kind of comments, it's just that's what real storytelling is. Anytime you can take something and relate it to real life events or real life perspectives, then it allows people to be able to relate to it. And unfortunately, the Marvel Cinematic Universe and some of the movies as of late have lost that, and they're too heavy-handed on the jokes and it being all funny, and it's not what it used to represent. Like their last real good movie was the Avengers Endgame. Like that's I
Yeah,
haven't really
everybody
seen
still
a
talks
really
about Avengers
good.
Endgame. Yeah, everybody still got a conversation about that.
I
But
haven't
yeah.
really seen a movie that's moved me. And personally, I like Infinity War more than Endgame, but still, like after that, there hasn't really been a good Marvel cinematic film since then.
Yeah, I will say I think Guardians wrapped up pretty nicely, but
Guardians, true. Yes, I agree.
yeah,
Guardians.
I do think they wrapped that one up pretty nicely. But yeah, I think they're just like you said, we might need to have another episode on this alone, but I think they wrapped up, I think they're just like you said, if they could just get somebody like a formula started, I don't know, maybe you pull from the writers, maybe you pull from some of these executive producers on 97 and just get something going with some fresh ideas, something new. 'Cause yeah, you have to keep that real world connection where people can relate, but also we want that larger than life superheroes, that Marvel is known for. So yeah, they just got to get that. Yeah, I don't think superheroes are dead. They need that recipe back that they had. They need to get that recipe back.
And I think Kevin Feige really needs to pay attention to the fact that he needs to hire people that are comic book fans. Like Beau DeMaio is a hardcore Marvel X-Men geek. You can tell. Like it really shows through his writing. He knows it through and through. Rather than hiring these directors who, some of these directors for these last few Marvel films are even newer directors, but rather than hiring like film directors that don't really know a lot about comics, hire comic book geeks. And they can be good writers too, and they can be good directors too, but hire people that actually know the comics and know the source material and are willing to respect it to where they can tell a really good cohesive story. Because I think that's what's lacking with these films as of late. It's like you can tell that these folks don't know these characters.
Yeah, you got to do your research. You got to have a reference. In this big old Marvel world, you got to have a reference. Like you got to go back to the comics. Because people, if not, people will let you know. If something is
They'll
out,
let you
people,
know.
yeah, one little thing on the uniform, they like, nope, an issue, da 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 da. It did not have this. So yeah, you gotta have the research. You gotta have your research tight.
Yeah, I mean, people was mad about MODOK and Ant-Man Quantumania because he wasn't really fairly represented the way he was in the comics or even in the animated series. And it's like, look, if you had hired someone that actually knows comics to be able to write him or direct it, then people would have actually been pretty satisfied with it. So anyway, I'm
Yeah.
ranting at this point. So I'm going to wrap this up. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode, and we look forward to covering Bright Eyes next week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
The Black Girl Nerds podcast is produced by Jamie Broadnax. The opening theme song to our show is written and performed by Samus. Various instrumentals are performed by Samus, Sky Blue, and Shubzilla. You can find various episodes of the Black Girl Nerds podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play Music, and Spotify.